Welcome to the Scottish podcast by Scottish people about Scottish things. We're three lifelong friends and displaced Scotsmen who get together to talk about our homeland, the weird stuff that happens there, and to remind us why we are the way we are. Welcome to This'll Do Nicely.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's story with Rory. I am Rory, and I am joined, well, I'm your front man, probably, your lead singer, lead guitarist, rhythm guitarist, most handsome, and then I am supported by, on the boring bass is Johnny, and on the percussion, you know,
look, mate,
Glockenspiel.
You can't have a band without a rhythm section, and we are here for you.
Is Christopher.
Yeah. you saying that I'm the wild card?
Well, you definitely do like to play shirtless with your, you know, oatmeal and your belly hanging out.
I don't even know what that's in reference to.
I think that's an old Will Ferrell joke that he's got a little bit. Oh, no, it's brown sugar. Brown sugar on his belly. Yeah.
You're not referring to Animal from the Muppets?
No, no.
The world's greatest drummer.
I could see you as an animal type.
Yeah.
Johnny, which guitarist do you idolize?
Guitarists?
Yeah.
Jack
Irvin, probably.
Jack Irvin is top of the list, obviously. My long-lost father. And I like guitarists.
Well, Johnny,
like,
I've got a surprise for you because he's here tonight.
Yes, finally. It's the only reason I did this podcast. Get closer to your dad. Get those guitars and I will. I like guitarists like Johnny Greenwood from Radiohead and Johnny Marr. I'll go Johnny.
I sense a theme here. This is a little egotistical even for you.
I quite mixed them in my guitar inspirations, I think. Like weirder, more like odd playing guitarists like Radiohead and the Smiths and others like that. Sadly, I'm not sure if I'd put Biffy Clyro in there.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm beginning to regret asking you this question.
It's fine. We'll make it work. Don't worry.
Well, look,
trying to have an interesting launch pad, and Johnny says he likes the guitarist from Radiohead. How are we going to sing into that?
I mean,
good grief. I'm a creep.
I'm a little bit worried about this week's episode. I've got a confession to make. I haven't prepared any material. I just, you know, scheduling got in the way. I didn't have a chance to look at anything. So, Chris, have you been able to prepare anything?
Before you barrel into this, guys, you know, we need to address the readers here.
Why do you always derail every version of, like, any segue that we could possibly have, I ever come up with?
What segue were you doing? You were asking me if I'd done any prep work. Obviously not.
It was a bit.
I watched the documentary.
Spent weeks writing about this hilarious comedic moment that it was going to set up.
Your delivery is so deadpan, so flat, nay, some would say boring, that it's difficult to know if you're leading up to a joke. Sorry, should we take that again? No, Rory, I haven't done any research for this topic.
Oh no! If neither you or I have done research for a topic, that means nobody will have prepared anything for this week. What are we going to do?
This'll do, lads. This'll do nicely.
Yeah, there you go. You set him up. Now he doesn't have to do anything.
Hate you guys.
Brilliant. See you next week.
Right. What were we going to say to the readers?
Look, I was going to say...
We
missed a week, and we've had several distressed messages from people. We've had multiple phone messages from people. Which,
we definitely got drunk dialed. 100%
We got drunk dialed by Jackie, and I think
that was amazing.
Sally in an early morning ramble dialed us.
The best bit of Sally is she's like, I really hope this deletes. Like, no, it doesn't.
It's not Mission Impossible, Sally. Yeah, but I mean, the reason we missed it is partly because you two fuckers were in Paris and you didn't even invite me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hell?
Went to Paris, didn't invite you. I got COVID from the friggin' Parisians. Thank you.
It's been a hell of a week.
Merci beaucoup. Yeah.
Have you still got COVID, Rory? You sounded like you were a bit miserable with it.
I was, but I'm over the worst of it now. I think I'm feeling better. Today has been a good day. It was bad. I mean, You know, I don't know if you guys noticed, but it's that COVID. It's a bit of a big deal.
I will say, I was with Rory in Paris, and he looked like a broken man for the last 2 days. We were quite worried about you. And we didn't think it was COVID at the time, but
I thought I was just hungover, got a COVID test, it came back negative. So not only did I catch it there, but also they can't test for dog.
So you then
poo-poo.
Gave it to everyone else on the plane.
I wore
on the way back.
I was the only person wearing a mask that entire flight back. Because I'm
God bless you, man. Citizen. God bless you. So Jane gave everybody COVID on the way back.
100%. 100%.
Because
definitely.
She's from a southern state originally and they don't believe in COVID.
Yeah, she does also like sneezing directly into strangers' faces.
Yeah, why the thing about Jane is whenever I've traveled with her, which is often, she's constantly licking other seats' TV screens and doing that fake sneeze with peanuts and pretzels into other people's laps, especially when she knows they have an allergy. It's very irresponsible.
Some people like to have a couple of drinks and then relax. Some people take maybe like a Benadryl to put them to sleep. Some people just watch a couple of movies on a flight. Jane enjoys actively spreading whatever germs or bodily fluids that she has available over as much of the surface of the inside of a plane.
She likes the danger.
Possible.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah,
it's what relaxes her in the air.
Johnny, Rory obviously caught COVID in Paris. What did you bring back as a souvenir?
just joy. I loved it. I did not bring COVID back. Amazingly, I was laughing because on day one I landed on Thursday morning and Rory and Jim were already there and literally sort of got off the flight and were like, we have to do stuff. Like, let's go. And I think we had like four cheese boards in the space of about six hours. It was great.
This is
what you do. Straight in, coffee and cheese. Perfect.
Coffee, cheese, great. Wine.
We make fun of the French a lot in this podcast, but they do a lot of things right, don't they? They know how to live.
Fucking nail a cheese board.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cheese, bread, wine. They're just terrific at it.
Simple things are done very well there, I would say.
Just now, Rory, did you invite Johnny to Paris or did he just turn up?
Honestly, I think he just kind of turned up.
Jane and I are, you're in the pub, Jane and I are going to Paris next week, and Johnny was like, all right, yeah, cool, I'll see you there.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to be alone, you know?
City of love.
You find people and attach yourself to them.
No, I mean, at this point, after going through COVID with Johnny just living a few blocks away from us, he was part of our bubble. And then everybody that we know and love in New York slowly moving away over time, it feels weird leaving the house without telling Johnny and making sure that he knows he's allowed to come along with us. So it's
did it cost a lot to crate him on the plane?
No, it was actually pretty cheap. I gave him a couple of puppy Benadryls. He went right to sleep. Yeah.
Really
the luggage handler,
and he didn't have to go through quarantine on the other side. That's
not in
great.
France, they're good with that. Yeah.
He's got all his shots.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, I got them all up to date beforehand. So I got some good pet insurance, so it really covers a lot of that stuff. It's good. It's useful. it's honestly the worst part is just the separation anxiety these days. Like,
oh yeah, I've
bad.
Seen what he's like. Yeah. I've seen that camera that you've got for him, and he really scratches the door.
Oh my god, it's like really destroying the sofa and some of the doors. It's getting bad, but
I don't understand why he humps his guitars. But I guess that's a control thing.
That's just a phase. I'm sure he'll grow out of it. It's fine.
You gotta break them in somewhere, you know.
Yeah, just gotta wipe them down every so often. Anyway, right. I've forgotten what we're talking about this week. Yeah. Sorry we were away for a week. Thank you to the people that checked in. It was, scheduling has just been tricky. And so we didn't want to give you 2 weeks of all filler, no killer. And so we decided just to skip the week. But it was nice to get couple of panicky emails from certain people, assuming that we'd been kidnapped. It was nice to know that we're cared for. But we're back this week.
It's gonna make that all the more difficult when we tell them that today's the last ever episode.
we're ending in like 91 or whatever this is. abruptly
on a semi-obscure Scottish band.
Yeah, and it's a two-parter as well, but we're just not going to release the second part. You'll never know about their later albums. Yeah, this week is a Johnny episode.
Hello. I mean, you'll be lucky if this turns into two parts, I'll tell you that now.
I know, who knows? We'll find out. But yeah, we're talking about, well, I mean, Johnny, do you want to kick us off? Because we're talking about...
Yeah, we've often talked about like interesting things from Ayrshire, you know, Johnny Walker, Robert Burns, my dad, and now we want to talk about Biffy Clyro, that semi-known band from Ayrshire. And so we have not mentioned them much, I think, on this pod, I don't think. Is that fair?
I don't think so. They're an interesting band. I don't think
they've come up once.
They never. Yeah,
Josh,
they...
can you, Josh, let us know if we've talked about them before.
Yeah,
Josh is like, actually on episode 14, about 4 minutes in, you referenced Biffy once.
But yeah, they never really broke America, did they?
Well, I think they're pretty globally known now, I would say.
Right.
And partly this came about because, one, I think they're quite an interesting band. I'm not sure I would necessarily describe myself as a huge fan, but I've been kind of aware of them. And then I'll come on to talk about it a bit later, but like there's a new documentary out about them on Amazon that I think we all watched. Did everyone see it?
Yeah.
Yep.
And so it seemed like a good time to talk about this slightly more obscure, but I think successful export from Scotland. And so I think, you know, sometimes you get like an idiot's guide to the internet or the idiot's guide to Biffy. I think this is like a guide to Biffy by an idiot. So maybe not exhaustive, but we'll stop on some things along the way. And hopefully, I'm amazed no one so far has said Biff will do nicely. So I'm claiming it right now.
I like it.
Okay.
Done.
Yeah.
Done. I mean, talking of names, the name of that documentary is very arrogant.
Cultural Sons of Scotland.
Yeah. I mean,
I think that's what our podcast was going to be called, wasn't
it? It should have been. Feel like it's a misstep by us, but
there's a lot of parallels here. You know, another talking is a great three-piece. We're going to talk about another great three-piece. So,
yeah.
I mean, we're not from Ayr, but you know, close enough, I guess.
Yeah, just down the road. I mean, Chris, you grew up on the Ayr road.
I did. They drove past my house every day.
Yeah.
Actually, that's probably not too much of a stretch because they went to the school round the corner from where I lived, Belmont House.
That's right.
Famous for their purple school uniforms, known as the Purple Ronnies.
I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
To the Americans that don't know, Purple Ronnie was a drinks mascot for a drink called Vimto back in the day, and that was their nickname.
That's brilliant.
Vimto's incredible.
Yeah.
Both of my brothers went to Belmont, and I never knew that's what I should have been calling them this whole time. Purple
Ronnies. Are they in Biffy Clyro?
Yes, they are the twins.
They are the twins.
The ginger twins.
Right, got it. Yeah. Suddenly it all adds up. It's great. Weird side note, by the way. I found out when I was reading about, because they grew up in Kilmarnock, and I sort of stumbled upon this note about Kilmarnock. Do you know the song Ballroom Blitz?
Yes.
Ballroom Blitz. Apparently the band The Sweet, who wrote it, were inspired by playing in Kilmarnock. And they, in like 1973, they were basically driven off stage, like being like under a barrage of like bottles and things being thrown at them, and they wrote that song based on that experience.
Wow. That was a Kinks song, right? Like famously covered by the Kinks, I think.
Sure.
All right. Well, I'll take it.
So if people don't know them, it's the three-piece. They were formed in Kilmarnock in 1995. It's made up of these two twins, as you mentioned, Rory, Ben Johnson and James Johnson, who play drums and bass respectively. And then Simon Neil, who's the kind of lead guitarist, lead vocalist. And I think what is kind of interesting about it is they have effectively sort of been in that, almost that lineup from the outset. So they started, you know, way back in the mid-90s. They're all kind of in their early 40s now, I think. And there's also this great, I was reading kind of about the early history of them, and there's this great reference in like the NME saying when they made the band, they were along with some guy known only as Barry. And there seems to be very little reference to this chap, Barry, who was obviously part of the band really early on and then booted out when one of the brothers joined, I think. And so, you know, if Barry's listening out there, where are you now? Let us know. I'm kind of curious.
Is this like a fifth Beatles situation?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Barry.
Yeah. I'd love to know what Barry's thinking about that. What could have been?
I mean, he's probably gutted.
Yeah. Yeah. My brother's coming in. See you there. You're right. So I wanted to talk like a little bit about some of the sort of history through their music. I'm going to stop on some songs along the way. It's definitely not exhaustive by any means, but there's kind of some interesting things, I think, along that story. So, you know, they start 1995. They're all kind of 15-ish at the time. And sans Barry start making music together.
Because I read something... And we talked about it briefly the other day. Was there another band member who, or was it, I don't think it was Barry,
yes, Barry.
That spun off to be the Zootons?
Yes, there was. I forget his name.
Is this
you're
post
right.
1995?
This is post 1995. Oh, I think there was a fourth. I think there was a fourth member, and he left like a couple of years later and started the Zootons. Who
his name
famously,
was Gary Zootons.
His name is Barry the Zooton. And they did that cover of Amy Winehouse, right? That was sort of what
no. Amy Winehouse did a cover of the Zootons.
Which is it that way around?
Yeah.
Yes, Rory's correct
because it's John Ronson or Ron
Mark
Barry Ronson Barry Ronson who did it with her, I think. Oh no, he did Valerie. I don't know. Look, anyway. Things
Valerie is a cover of a Zootons song.
Yes, by Amy Winehouse with John Barry Ronson.
I'll be amazed.
It's definitely staying in. I'm not editing anything these days.
Okay, well, let's keep going.
You look disgusted, Irvin.
He's so annoyed. I feel this is going to go off the rails early, but let's stick with it for now. So we're 1995. They start playing under the name Screwfish, actually, in the first place, and play their first gig at the Key Youth Centre in East Kilbride, like a little, you know, we'll know it well, town in the south side of Glasgow. I think it's worth saying here, it's interesting Chris talked about Belmont, because I asked my cousin Simon about this, because he also is a very similar age, grew up in Kilmarnock, and the twins from the band lived on a street called Lansborough Drive, which is the street my grandparents lived on. And so it's all very like weirdly connected to home for me, this story a bit. But I thought it was quite interesting. And I asked him a bit of like, you know, he's known them for a very long period and like, what are the songs to look out for and how would he describe them? And he actually gave me this good description where he said, you know, great songs, musically very interesting, all brilliant musicians, often three-part harmony, music that ranges from heavy to poignant gentle and, you know, songs that even in their big state can stand up to sort of acoustic versions too, which I thought was like a really neat encapsulation. When you look back at what they've done over the course of their careers, it's something really interesting. And actually, I'll come back to it later on, but he talks about seeing them, you know, 25 odd years ago in like the Key Park Tavern in Kilmarnock. And in the documentary, they talk about, you know, going back to some of those places to see where they all
began. That bar is featured in that documentary. Right. It looks, I wouldn't go in there if my life depended on it.
Yeah, it looks that like looks a terrifying very rough. Bar.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was
interesting. And they're all like, oh, isn't it beautiful? Oh.
So for the readers, there's these wee pubs all around Scotland, but I think predominantly in the small towns outside of the big cities, which it's a single door, quite a heavy door, and then it's got these tiny little windows, probably like to either side of the door, which are covered with a grate of metal.
It's basically no windows. Like it looks like a building with no windows.
You go inside and it's just pitch black, filthy, and just covered with the same guys that live there, basically. And they're all terrifying, but potentially also like an incredible night out if you're willing to brave it.
I just love the idea of these, like, you know, 15-16-year-olds playing like heavy rock grunge shows in there, and just sort of old men in the corner being like, what's this music about? It's also great. I'll talk about it in a bit, but like, it is amazing, that shot in the documentary, because it's these sort of like, now, you know, very tattooed sort of like rock star guy is walking through a little like street in Kilmarnock past this like quite shitty bar and be like, ah, that's where we started. And it's like, oh yeah, they've kind of still got this connection to home that I think is quite nice.
Yeah, it's very nice.
So early days, the three of them end up moving to Glasgow, so not very far away, but the twins study at Stow College, Simon studying at Glasgow Uni, and they're starting to build some momentum at this point. So they're kind of playing the, you know, the scene around Glasgow, trying to get noticed a little bit. But, you know, this is quite early days, I guess. And they get spotted by a guy called Dee Ball, who goes on to become their manager. And this is like kind of 1999, and they basically released their first single on this Baba Yaga record label. And I think it's quite interesting, like, for a band that's been around for quite a long time to go right back to the early sounds. And I want to like play a little bit of this because it's kind of interesting seeing almost like the first song, and then we'll talk about the sort of last stuff. And it's funny because I was looking at the lyrics and it starts and it just says, I'd like to be in a bucket of pee until everything else is just fine.
Their lyrics are nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, especially at the beginning. They eventually get to the, how do we get people, a bunch of people in a stadium to sing along to us later on. But at the beginning, absolute bollocks. But I like it.
Kind of nonsense. Yeah. And so let me just play a little bit of this. We don't need to play the whole thing, but I'll just, I think it's quite interesting to sort of hear the early like steps they were making. So here we go.
I'd like to be in a bucket of pee until everything else is just fine. You would believe what I cannot deceive until everything else is just mine. I'm over you. I'm over.
They're just impersonating Nirvana.
Right.
At this point.
So you sort of, I mean, you get the idea. And so like, I think what is interesting there is, one, you can hear the influence. And I think that was what was happening at the time. It was like, you know, heavy grunge, hardcore, sort of like bit of prog rock in there. At the same time, I think what's interesting is like you see some of the beginnings of what, even then, what they became known for, of like very contrasty stuff, like really light, delicate, and then like mega, mega, mega heavy on the other end. And these sort of like slightly dissonant, weird chords. And so I think it's kind of interesting to hear that even at the beginning, because you do see, you hear that, I think, as you go through the rest of the stuff they made for, you know, years after that.
Wait, you think, so they formed in 95, or is that their first album?
So this was their first album. So basically this is like, you know, in the space of, it's the first single really. So in the space of like a few years, they've been noticed from playing live, they put out a single, and this is sort of the beginning of like growing some momentum around it, I think.
Because Cobain died in like 94, so this is peak Nirvana time.
Right.
So that's, you can definitely hear the influence.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that gets them a bit of radio play. They start to build some credibility. There's an interesting thing in Glasgow. So at Stow College, which is like a big music production college, they have their own record label called Electric Honey, which you may or may not have heard of. But it's gone on to become quite famous because they had people like Bell and Sebastian and Snow Patrol signed to that in the early days.
Right.
And so they notice Biffy and invite them to basically put out an EP on this label, which is kind of cool. So this is now kind of 2000-ish, and they put out this EP called The Kids Who Pop Today Will Rock Tomorrow, all one word.
That's not a good name, which is another theme that I see in their songs. They've got some good songs, but some bad names.
The names are,
I mean, the name of the band itself is bad, isn't it? I mean, isn't
Well, I'll come on to that in a sec, because I think there's a lot of like mystery around that even, I think. So anyway, like before we get into that, I think, you know, they're starting to get some attention. They play at things like Tea in the Park, which is a big famous festival and what at the time was in Bilado in Perth and Kinross. They get some plays through Vic Galloway, who's a BBC DJ who sort of supports a lot of like early artists. And so then like, and it's from 95 to 2000, they're now hit a point where they get noticed at like the unsigned stage and get a record contract. So they've done the kind of college one and now they've got their first like proper.
Are they still Screwfish?
No, so they're Biffy now.
So they are Biffy.
I think Screwfish lasted very, very short period of time.
Got it. Well, probably a very sexy fish.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting is, like, you know, in a space of like being 15 and playing music with your mates for 5 years, they're now, you know, a signed band. And like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is, like, from here on begins a run of like 9 studio albums. 5 of them reached the top 5 in the UK album charts. They had 4 UK number ones. They get a Mercury Prize nomination. And they just seem to be constantly touring. I sort of keep just thinking the only word for them is prolific. They just are always working all the time. Yeah. And that is kind of impressive in itself. And so we should talk about the name, because I think when you're met with a name like Biffy Clyro, you're like, what is this? Like, is it bad? Is it a thing?
Do you guys dislike the name? Because I've read that and heard that a few times over the past week about people not liking the name Biffy Clyro, but maybe it's just because I know it's fine now.
Yeah, I find it hard to imagine hearing it the first time now, because they're sort of so known to me after all these years. But I quite like it for that reason. Like, it sounds kind of cool and interesting, and people still tell stories about it. So, like, maybe that's a good thing in a name.
I've heard one story as to the history behind why they're called that, and I don't know if it's apocryphal or if it's real or not.
But so what's which one, Johnny, is it you've heard?
The Cliffy Biro story.
That's my favorite one I've heard. The thing I think about them all is
explain the Cliffy Biro.
Yeah, you should tell that story first.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think as the story goes, they were in school or somewhere, and they were trying to come up with a cool name, and one of them had a biro pen featuring Cliff Richard, the singer Cliff Richard, on it.
Well, I think they were inventing merch as if they were making merch. They were just playing around, being like, we should invent merch for Cliff Richard.
And Cliff Richard is like this British English crooner, like 70s crooner type singer. Very famous at home, but like, he's like, your gran fucking loves him type of singer.
So my understanding of it was always just a riff on that.
Yeah, they called them... There was a story they were making up Cliff merch, and they called them Cliffy Biros. And then I think by accident or on a night out, someone said Biffy Clyro by accident, and it sort of stuck.
Yeah. That is nonsense.
The thing I read about that story was, like, when they've talked about it, they're like, there's just not a lot to do in air. The weather is terrible. It's like, I think they're very mysterious about the name. There seems to be lots of other, you know, it's been said that it's named after a footballer who played for Ayr United. There's one about it being an acronym for big imagination for feeling young because life yearns real optimism. There's another one that Ben said where apparently Biffy's the nickname of the spy who the James Bond novels were based on, and Clyro's a village where they went on holiday when they were young. And so I suspect they're just being very Scottish and telling random stories, as you do. You know, you got the gift of the gab, you just say stuff about things and end up where there's 20 stories about the origins of the name.
I love it. I love that idea. But a lot of people don't like the words. Like, they think it's a terrible name.
Oh. Well, I think that the other side of that is it's kind of become... It's quite a Scottish thing, but it's become a chant, like people saying Mon the Biff or singing that at their gigs. And whatever way around you think about it, they've kind of owned it, I suppose, is one way to think about it. And actually, there's an interesting thing in the documentary where I think they're talking about early on being approached about like record deals. And one of the deals is sort of under the basically saying, we'd love to sign you, but you have to change the name. And I think they were like, no.
Oh, really?
We're not doing that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I don't know if that was necessarily by the name, but I like the attitude of it.
Yeah.
They do seem very kind of set in their ways right from the get-go, like very heavy, and they know who they are, which is quite unusual, I think, for teenagers.
That's great.
So
that's
good. Yeah, I really like that. I thought there was a kind of attitude in that was, you know, we want to play our music. We're not going to change for you just because you've, you know, signed us, which is kind of cool.
It's very reminiscent of the Proclaimers. We talked about them and their accent, and the first song that they ever played was Throw the R Away, and it's like, we are who we are, we're going to do our thing, like it or not.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Must be something about having twins in your band.
Yes.
Makes you great.
Good point.
So that's kind of like the early parts of them, you know, kind of finding their feet, releasing their first kind of bits of music. And I wanted to like not go through like this huge discography of stuff, and I don't necessarily want to walk through all of that, but there's a few I kind of want to stop at along the way. So, you know, they start first like full length album is called Black and Sky. This is now in like March 2002, I guess, sort of first like proper in quote marks release and like professional debut, I suppose. And I think, you know, reading a little bit about it, I think it's sort of seen as, you know, credible, if not perfect, in their sort of first steps into that space. Definitely, like, again, you know, lots of reminiscent of music that's happening in America. And I think, you know, you hear it in the way he sings sometimes. Like, he does sort of let that American voice happen a bit, even though he's quite a Scottish-sounding guy when you hear him talking.
It's pretty heavy.
Yeah, like, absolutely. The thing that I thought was interesting about that album was, like, even that one, it's got this, like, really gnarly guitar tone that I was like, wow, it's, like, it's heavy is the only word, I think, to talk about it.
Because it's got, it's not a bad album. It's got a kind of heavy, punky, emo feel to it. Very sort of 2000s, like teenage girls that want to feel a bit dangerous.
Yes, it is. I mean, all those albums in 2000 are all quite 2000, I think. So it's sort of first full length. They released another one the next year in 2003 called Vertigo Bliss. You know, at this point, they're now touring pretty extensively. You know, they support Weezer at the Barrowlands. They're doing things like the Kerrang tour. They do their first UK headline tour.
I saw them at that point, I think. Not seeing Weezer, but I think it was Sum 41 I went and saw. Right. And they were the support act. And I think I saw them twice as a support act around about that time. And at that point, I wasn't particularly taken with them. Because, you know, sometimes when you go to a band and you're like, oh, just get the support act out of the way. I can't. And they were pretty heavy at the time. And I do quite like heavy music at times, but I wasn't in a place to
enjoy Sum 41.
I just wanted to hear, you know, those sweet ass riffs of of the album, also All Killer No Filler. I didn't want to hear this local Scottish band. I also remember them coming on and being like, what cool rock band has two gingers in it? I mean, seriously, it's like, I can't take this seriously.
Vertigo Bliss is that was my introduction to Biffy Clyro. Like the album cover is very provocative, if you will. I don't know if you guys remember.
Do you want
but
to describe it for the listeners, for the readers?
Well, it's by, so I read up about it a little bit. It's by a comic book artist, an Italian comic book artist called Milo Manara. And it is a drawing or a rendition of a very attractive lady masturbating. She is wearing a sundress. So you don't see anything. It's not graphic, but it's definitely, you know what she's doing. But I remember being pretty young and in like FOP in Glasgow and seeing this album cover and just being like, oh my God, what is this? Like, this is titillating and exciting and something that I didn't quite
know what
to do. It's
funny thinking back to even that, like when album art was, you know, even for us, when we, you know, we grew up in the era more of like CDs and maybe cassettes a little bit early on, but it was a huge part of listening to music in a way, and going to like the record store and like seeing that these like imagery that went with it. And you don't really get that now if you're listening to stuff on Spotify or whatever. It's just like a random playlist in the background. And
there was bands that were literally changing their names to things like A-Town in order to be at the front of the racks of CDs because they believed they were more likely to buy it. But I ended up getting that album because I was just a young, creepy little boy fascinated by it, bought it. And then I remember when listening to it and then somebody telling me that they were a Scottish, and I didn't believe them because I was like, no, I've listened to it. They're definitely American just because of the way he sings, which he grows out of. But I think it's a good album. It's got a couple of good singles in it. I think they did pretty well. That artist did the art for all the singles as well, and it's actually pretty good stuff. Nice. But it's all pretty sexy. You
know. I want to play just one. This is like a live version of one of the songs from that album, actually. Where let me just play it. And talk about it.
Taking part, what counts? For you were not right. Never understand my goal for you. Looking back, seems that everyone in my life.
That one, I think, is quite interesting to me, Rory, because what you're saying about, like, the kind of never...
Yes. it's very yellow card or even, like it's got even hints of, like, Nickelback. You take a wrong turn and you're in...
It's funny when you talk about them sounding like that. If you look at that particular video... there and you see them all kind of covered in tattoos, and he's got very long hair there and he's very hairy and just trying to look like that ultimate rock star. But then when you watch the documentary, I think they're just a bunch of like Scottish geeks.
Yes.
I love that. They're almost kind of three wee guys from Kilmarnock.
Yeah, they're just three wee guys from Kilmarnock, but it's almost like they're playing make-believe but being international rock stars. And like the singer's name again?
Simon Neil.
Simon, like throughout
the classic rock star name, Chris. How can you forget the name Simon?
Simon throughout the documentary just has these like ridiculous outfits on that you would think, you know, wouldn't look out of place if like Russell Brand was wearing them or something like that. But then the whole time when he talks, you're like, who are you?
Yeah.
Like I feel like he doesn't know who he is in a weird way.
I think that's often the way with music and bands. Like, there's a bit in the documentary where they're talking about the, like, partly the reason, or they talk about recording in LA and saying, like, it sort of afforded them this escape a bit from normality in order to, like, let some of that out. And, that, like, I think there probably is a bit of, like, playing someone else in some of that stuff to, like, it's like a performance, you know?
Yeah, I was quite struck by the fact that they said that they went to LA so quickly and then hadn't recorded anything in Scotland for 20-odd years, which I was really surprised by.
I think there's a bit of that in everybody. Like, I think if you had the chance... I like that part in the documentary where they were talking about going to LA and just being like, oh, we can just kind of be whatever we want to be a bit crazy. People are more accepting of you there in LA than they are in Kilmarnock. And I think if any of us had that opportunity to maybe dress a bit funnily, do more stupid things, whatever, and like stupid or unusual things, we probably would. It's all the things that we're too embarrassed to do. And it was kind of nice. I thought it was kind of fun seeing them dressed in their, you know, rompers and big fur
coats. Also, I think they actually live in air now. Which I thought was kind of interesting, where he's talking about, you know, a lot of writing the songs happens in Scotland, and then they sort of go to these far off lands to, you know, make an album and record it and do all the detail that happens with
back.
That. And,
kind
of interesting.
I want to, while we're still on Vertigo Bliss, I was looking around, I was trying to find reviews from back when it first came out, and I ended up just on some random website called Drowned in Sound, and I'm just going to read one sentence of the review. Their angular lottery ball bumbling popcorn is special, so special that it seeps from the heart and strides from the speakers like a swimsuit model, glistening, all hair flicking and perfect smiles.
Wow, you found my review. That's some great writing, that.
That is. This guy, I mean, it goes on and on and on like this, but I just thought that one sentence really summed up his
review. You know, there's a word, I think you said angular in there. It's funny, yes. We were talking about this the other day. I keep wanting to describe them as slightly spiky because I think they've got this like contrast thing happening in the music where it's like weird timing and then big and then quiet, and it's all a bit like, the only word I can think of is spiky, but angular is quite good also.
Well, I do think that's why I was slightly drawn to this, because I do think his discussion, his commentary of angular lottery ball bumbling popcorn is kind of accurate. There are very...
What does that even mean?
Is that positive? That mean? Is that a nice review?
Yeah, I think so. Because it's like the way their music goes from, like, in the middle of a song, you'd never quite know where it's going to go. It's like...
Yes.
Fairly sedate and melodic, and then all of a sudden it's kind of punky and fast, and then it's a bit kind of not necessarily electro but really staccato, and then drops right back down again. It's just, and the vocals are all over the place, the lyrics are bananas. Like, it's,
you've said this at a really good time, Rory, because there's a song on the next album called Infinity Land. So this is like 2004. Okay. And they're getting a bit more experimental. And there's a song called There's No Such Thing as a Jaggy Snake, which is spiky in itself, which is great. But I think I wanted to play a bit of this, actually, because this is almost like all the essential Biffy elements. And I'll thank again my cousin Simon for pointing me to this. But, you know, it's got the, like, weird, like, time signatures, and it's got, like, harmonies, and it's kind of light and gentle and then big, and it's, like, heavy. And so let me just play the beginning of this, because it is...
Which album's this?
So this is on Infinity Land, which is the one after... Vertigo. Vertigo, yeah.
Is that like the Mighty Boosh?
Yeah, I mean, they've got moments of that.
Yeah, and then it just sort of takes off, you know?
You're, I mean, kind of picking...
kind of mad. Yeah, I'm picking you are picking,
but you're picking their slightly more obscure songs. But even if you pick their singles, ones that they've released, it is still very... Those singles are very... Especially at these albums are very all over the fucking place.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what then becomes quite interesting. So, like, you know, they've made three albums in the space of 3 years. And I think this is like a tipping point where if you got to know Biffy after this point, you might think they're a stadium rock ballad band. If you heard, you know, certain
after
things
this
along
point,
the way.
Yes.
After this point, right. And so they've been, like, by many accounts, pretty successful. But this is like 2006 onwards, I think, marks the moment of, like, greater mainstream success, I think. And I actually think often bands, you know, they sort of run that risk of, like, losing their early audience by becoming more commercially commercial sounding or something.
They sold
actually,
out, man.
Yeah.
They totally sold out.
And I'd sort of argue that I don't think they have really as my, like, TLDR on this. But at this point
it's
on,
interesting
it's like,
you say that, because I actually kind of fell away from them after initially knowing them, and it didn't really get taken with them. But then when they became more of a kind of stadium band, I guess because I'm a sucker and mainstream, that's when I kind of took interest in them again.
Yeah. And actually, so this is now, the next album comes out, it's called Puzzle. And, you know, you start to see them doing these, like, bigger, more epic sounds, like more anthemic, experimenting with, like, the actual soundscape. So there's things like there's strings, there's choir, you know, scores in there, and all sorts of stuff. And it's sort of, you know, it gets more melodic, a bit less grungy. I don't think it's, like, lost that entirely. Like, there's actually an amazing opening song called Life is a Problem, called Because Everything Dies, that if you watch in their live shows is just, like, is great. It's like a total romper. But I think there's a quite famous song on this album called Folding Stars that I think got a lot of, press and notice, partly because it's inspired by quite a sad story where in 2004, Simon, the lead singer's mum, died of cancer. And so he basically wrote this ballad for her. And when he's talking about it, he says, you know, she really liked the quiet song, so I wrote the song for her. I'm immensely proud of it. It makes me happy when people say they connect with the song, but I'm not sure we'll ever play it live. Not anytime soon. And so I think, he kind of reneged on that a bit over time, where they've played it, you know, at a few shows over the years. But it's just this, like, big, floaty ballad. I'll play a tiny bit just because I'm sure you'll recognize this one. But I think this is like a good encapsulation of the ones that are more beginning to get more anthemic, I suppose.
That's a shame. That's a bad looking video. But yes, and this album's a good album. Puzzle's a good album. I'd definitely, if you like their later stuff, definitely listen to Puzzle. But it's definitely a stepping stone. There's no doubt about it. Like, it is a bridge between their earlier punky stuff, their earlier heavier stuff, and then what ends up.
I mean, even that song, I mean, it's pretty overt about what it's about. If you just listen to it, you'd know the story. Because he talks about, like, blood drips like weird inverted balloons, and the chorus is sort of just his mum's name, and so it's very sad actually, but it's also like this big uplifting melody in it, and it's like quite a big arena song almost, and so you start to see more of that, I think, in the music from this point onwards.
and his lyrics making more sense, being clearer, because that's it, like, you listen to the earlier albums, and this is part of being stadium rock, being anthemic, is that people can sing along, entire crowds can sing along to. The first couple of albums, I mean, you're lucky if you can figure out the words that you sing, which is not necessarily a bad thing. If, like, I enjoy,
that's for the diehards,
right? That's for, exactly,
that are right at the front in the Biffy fucking Clyro t-shirts being like, oh, I know this one. Oh, I heard this one in the Keys, the Keys back in Killy.
It's Johnny's
back
cousin.
That's my cousin. He's there. Yeah. He did send me, I hope he listens to this because he was very kind and helped me out, but he was telling me that one of the ones he sent me was like, that's me right at the front in the crowd. It's like, yes. It's great.
Yeah, we should say their other, yeah, they, so they got them on the Biff. And the other sort of catchphrase, I guess, is Biffy fucking Clyro. Which is too.
I didn't know that was a thing. Works, I right? love that t-shirt.
Yeah,
I love that t-shirt. Right? I would. Yeah.
Okay, so that album Puzzle sort of brings us to like the end of this first chapter about Biffy. You know, we've seen the beginning of them, like, as 15-year-olds playing in their band. We've made it to them being now officially big, I think we can say, where they're, you know, supporting, like, the Rolling Stones, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, The Who, even. They're playing Glastonbury, all the shows.
Have they had any singles at this point?
Yeah, I think there's been singles, like, from all these albums, you know.
Popular singles? Are they still, like, an album band?
I don't know where it got to. I suspect Folding Stars did quite well, I would have thought, for a Puzzle. But
if you bear with me, chaps,
here we go.
Their Wikipedia entry has them at, they've had a few singles from 1999 onwards. The highest they get to before this kind of peak is the 7 in the Scottish charts a couple times with Glitter and Trauma in 2004, and Only One Word Comes to Mind in 2005. Yeah. And in the UK charts, they don't get above 21.
Which is not... In fact,
by the looks of things, they have never had a number one hit in the UK.
Oh, in the UK chart. But they have in Scotland, right?
Yes.
Didn't they have one that they beat something really funny, or it beat them to number one, that was like a song from a musical or something funny?
I don't know.
Yes, they got beaten in the Oscars, the best song in the Oscars for Moulin Rouge soundtrack, which we've opined on before with Ewan McGregor in the last episodes.
I mean, you got to get it up if it's going to be Ewan, that's fair.
Yeah.
So, okay, so they're doing okay singles-wise, but yes, they're very much an albums band.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Nowhere near America right now, right?
No, I don't think so. I think this is the interesting thing, where, like, arguably they're very big and very popular, but you don't sort of put them in the same category as, like, I don't know who's a good comparison. Like,
I mean, they literally just won, like, the best band in Britain from Kerrang or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, they always feel slightly culty to me as a band. You know, like, they're not a... They've not hit a... Not
no need for that language, band,
but like,
Johnny.
But, like, Coldplay, for instance, have been huge in America and come from being a British band. I wouldn't say they're in the same...
Yeah, but that's the Paltrow effect.
Right, right.
You know, if Paltrow would, you know... sidled up to good old Simon,
right,
said, "Can you smell my vagina candle?" Then who knows where they'd be.
Different story.
Oh, vagina eggs. Yeah, and Coldplay write songs for adverts and movies,
right,
whereas Buffet
Fix You's been in every single TV show. Yes. Every single medical drama ever.
Yes, exactly.
And so they wrote it, they were like, you know where this is going to work well? Medical dramas.
Weirdly enough, Spiky Snakes or whatever the fuck it was called. Jaggy Snakes doesn't quite make it into, you know, ER or Grey's Anatomy finales.
Starting a campaign.
Would have been good in Survivor. They missed a trick there.
Yeah, it would be very good.
There's no such thing as a Jaggy Snake.
All right. So are we leaving? What are we doing? Are we leaving it there, Johnny?
Yeah, we will continue. We'll continue Biffy, I think, next week. And
or will we, readers? Oh, who knows?
Wait, just go away and listen to the first three albums. Listen to Puzzle, and you know what? If you want to prepare for next week, listen to Only Revolutions, because you know that'll really make you happy.
We're going to also put a playlist together of all the songs referenced in here that we'll stick out on the link it in our bios for Spotify if people want to have a listen.
Oh, that sounds very professional. I like it. Sounds good. Exciting. And, you know, as we said last episode, get in contact with us. Email us thistledonicely@gmail.com, tweet us and Facebook us and phone us, whatever our number is. It's all in the show notes. And tell us what topics you want to hear from us. Ask us questions we can maybe address in our 100th episode that's coming up real soon. And so we're going to do...
Or is it?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't got anything planned, but maybe we'll do something exciting. Maybe we will.
Well, I liked the... Well, this would only be if 100 was our last episode. From reader Rebecca Geis suggested we do This'll Adieu Nicely.
That's good.
Yes.
Like that.
Have that. But this is our last episode, so tough to say.
Yeah. So
do that. Yeah.
Maybe come back next week.
Guess you'll have to tune in. Comme ci, comme ça.
Yeah. So I guess This'll Do Nicely, lads. Biff'll Do Nicely. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you like the show, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and write a quick review on whichever podcasting app you're using. It really does help us out. We'd love to hear from you either via our email, thistledonicelypod@gmail.com, or via facebook.com/thistledopod, or follow us on Instagram and Twitter @thistledopod. You can also visit our website, thistledonicelypod.com. All original music in this podcast is written and performed by our very own Johnny Naismith. Please like and subscribe to his YouTube channel and follow him on Instagram @JAW_KNEE_. Love, hugs, and kisses from the Thistle Do Nicely pod.
Had an absolutely brilliant chat with Finlay as I was putting him to bed. He was tugging on his willy.
No.
And I said, stop playing with your willy. And he went, I have a willy. And I went, yes, you do. Daddy has a willy. Yes, I do. I have a small willy. Daddy has a big willy. And I went, well, thank you very much. and mummy has a willy. No, mummy doesn't have a willy. Sophie has a willy. Sophie doesn't have a willy. But Pepper has a willy. Pepper has a willy. I have a willy. Daddy has a willy. Mummy has no willy. All right, okay. Also known as, it's also known as a penis, Finlay. Yeah.